Thanks for listening to Shift Your Spirits. I'm Slade Robertson. For 12 years, I've been a professional intuitive and personal development blogger. I try to talk about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is Sunday, September 23rd, 2018, as I record this introduction. This week, I have a solo episode about spirit guide names. Just a lot of me talking about my experiences with retrieving names clairaudiently, claircognizantly, things that have come up over the years in doing readings with people around their spirit guides. That's coming up in just a bit. As always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show, so be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. In personal news, I hope I'm not talking too fast. I got a package in the mail from Dina DeCastro, who sent me some wonderful coffee from Portland, Oregon, with a cool little mug to drink it out of and some chocolate. And so I am here on a Sunday sipping some wonderful Oregon coffee. Thank you, Dina. That was really sweet of you. And hopefully I'm not over caffeinated. I also feel a little bit of pressure to not talk too much in the intro because I have a tendency to talk for a long time when I do the solo episodes. In my mind, I plan these and I think, oh, a solo episode, I can't talk that long about that subject. And then I think, oh, I'll put a few things in, you know, for personal news. And it never really matches up necessarily that the weeks that I have lots of personal stuff to talk about is the week where the show segment's shorter. Sometimes you get just, you know, more of the same thing, like a lot of content in the segment and a lot of content in the intro. And then there are other weeks where everything's a little crisper and more clean and we get right to it. So maybe I feel a little bit of pressure to talk faster or something because I'm looking at this list of things that I want to share here. One interesting thing that I just wanted to say with all the new people who are contacting me from the Shift Your Spirits community on Facebook, I've gotten a lot of new messages coming in from people and faces that I've never met before. And interestingly, I had two people in a row bring up this idea that my podcast is supposed to be a debunking show, like a show where I talk about spiritual, paranormal subject matter and then debunk it. And I don't know if, you know, they just haven't had time maybe to explore some of the episodes. They may be new to what I write about. The tagline may have implied to these people with fewer hearts and flowers, you know, that I'm like tearing that stuff down. And I want to make it really clear that while I do have a lot of irreverence in my show and in my personal attitude, the purpose of Shift Your Spirits is for me to share how I make all this really ethereal stuff more accessible. In my mind, it's about bringing it down to earth and also making it a part of our daily lives, finding magic in the mundane, taking these things that seem really far-fetched or that you have to be, you know, super psychic in order to experience or something, and saying, you know, a lot of those kinds of shows and content are about really miraculous experiences, whereas, you know, experience and phenomena, there's a spectrum. And what I experience in my everyday life and what I try to bring in is a much lower level, even consistent experience of the paranormal and spirituality and psychic phenomenon, all that stuff. So just keep in mind, I'm not trying to debunk stuff, though sometimes I might do that. But more than anything, I'm just kind of trim it up a little bit and make it more accessible, make more of you feel that you have access to this thing that you might have put on a pedestal. And, you know, the concept of Shift Your Spirits is meant to be a multidimensional sort of version of that phrase, meaning it could be about spirits in terms of the spirits around you, the spirit entities around you, and learning to work with them. It's also meant to just be about shifting your attitudes in whichever direction you need to. Maybe you need to go from being not so self-aware to more focused on what's going on within you. Maybe you need to shift from being kind of all over the place to being more grounded. Maybe you need to shift from, you know, esoteric to more reality-based experiences and behaviors, whatever that is for you. I find that one of the recurring themes for Shift Your Spirits is around reframing our attitudes and our programming and the language that we use around things. So, you know, shifting the inner voices to be more useful and supportive. So I just wanted to say that. I'm not debunking anything here on a regular basis. Like, that's not the point of the show. Shift however you need to shift, by all means, and shift whatever you want to shift. In 50 new things before 50 news, you know, I haven't had a lot of things on my list. There's a couple little things, like either that I can't or won't mention publicly that I might have put on there. But as far as like things that I can share, so I recently tried matcha for the first time at the Wildflower Tea Shop and Apothecary. Matcha is a stimulant. It's an alternative to caffeine. It is a substance that has a comparable powerful stimulant property like coffee, but from what I understand, it's meant to be a little bit more time release, so maybe not so much of a spike. I love a stimulant. I particularly love natural stimulants or alternative stimulants. I like yerba mate a lot because it's a little bit of a different buzz than just straight up caffeine. And another thing that I want to say, even though I'm sitting here drinking coffee in the middle of the day on Sunday, I love a good coffee buzz, but I'm not one of those people that drinks coffee all day long, because here's the thing. In order to really get that euphoria that I get from something like really amazing mocha, in order to get that kind of high, I really can't do a whole lot of it, and I can't build up a tolerance to it. So I drink very small amounts of caffeine, one cup of coffee in the morning, and then I do a small pot or large cup of black tea, usually Earl Grey, in the afternoons. And I love those moments, but more is not necessarily more when it comes to stimulants and caffeine. So anyway, I wanted to try something that one of the other regulars always gets. So on like once a week, I try to mix up what my order is and get something different than just my straight up Earl Grey. And so I've been playing with this idea of having the women make me whatever they make for the other regular clients, because there's a lot of people who are regulars in there and we're all friends and we all have these really specific little orders. So on that particular day, I felt that I wanted to order what Fred always gets. And lo and behold, Fred walked in the door right as I asked the new girl who was working, "Hey, do you know what Fred's order is?" And luckily he was there to inform us. And so it was a matcha latte made with almond milk. And it was kind of a cool buzz. Like, I sort of dug it. I'll definitely try it again. In other personal news, I'm super excited that there's a new Metric album out. I don't talk a lot about like TV show. Well, I mention stuff like TV shows and movies and things like that. I don't gush a lot about books and music, because I could have an entire podcast about either one of those subjects. But it occurred to me that it's very overwhelming to keep up with new music the way that I did, you know, when I was in my teens and 20s. I just don't have time for it. I don't listen to music a lot in the house. I've always been a car music listener. Like, I like to jam out in the car. So I was very excited. One of my favorite bands of the 21st century is the band Metric. And what I love about them is they have a little bit of every kind of element of pop and rock music that I love. A lot of new wave elements, female vocalist, really cool lyrics. And most of all, they have a really badass, edgy, hard, kind of aggressive guitar element in their music as well. And even those are a lot of cool synthesizers and new wave sounds, they have a very straightforward rock drum kit going on. So it's really, you know, like a good garage band kind of sound. Their music is interestingly structured, but it has lots of satisfying pop elements to it. So anyway, you know, they've been leaking like a couple of songs dripping out over the last 6 weeks or so. And I'm like, just give me the whole thing already. And it must have dropped on Tuesday, because when I opened up Spotify, it took me right to it and said, here's new music that you're following. And I was like, yes. So I spent a lot of this weekend driving around, listening to Metric really loud. And I have to say, as far as spiritual practices go, you know, all the grounding and meditation and personal care and cleansing and all that kind of stuff, nothing makes me happier than driving around jamming out to a really good new album by a band that I love. So if you're looking for something new that is a little bit upbeat, I felt super energized this week by having this particular music in my world. It was a really kind of happy little shot in the arm. So check out Metric. The Art of Doubt is the name of the new album. Something else that I want to mention from kind of personal news, kind of work-related stuff, is I often work with writers. I attract a lot of people who ask me questions about writing and publishing and the creative process from the perspective of writers. So I know there are a lot of you out there in the audience. A lot of my clients are writers. And one thing that I have found myself recommending a lot is, a lot of the writers that come to me have children who are writers, right? So they're much more sensitive to the idea of supporting this art or this ability in their children. And one of my favorite games to play, of course, is if I could go back in time and, you know, give myself the tools that I have now, what kind of difference would it make and who I am and what I've been able to accomplish. And so I have a passion for supporting other writers, in particular young writers, in particular kids. So once a year I go and I teach a class, a daily workshop in creative writing for sixth graders, 11 and 12 year olds. And something that came up a lot with some of these kids and with their parents contacting me and saying, hey, is there something that I should put my kids in? Is there some kind of, you know, programs or after school kind of classes that they should do? And the one thing that I find myself recommending for young authors in particular, preteens, teenagers, college students, definitely, is the Wattpad community. Wattpad is WATTPAD. So Watt like electricity wattage and pad like iPad. Wattpad.com is the website. It's also an app that you can download on your tablet, computer, smartphone. And it is a writing community. It is one of the largest online writing communities in the world. And it is a place where both professional writers release material. For instance, Margaret Atwood is a huge Wattpad queen. She releases a lot of material on Wattpad these days that is exclusive to her Wattpad community and the people who follow her there. So you'll have to go and check it out, because I may not be telling it right or doing it justice. I dip in and check it out a little bit. I'm not sure it's the perfect platform for me, but it is particularly a great platform for younger people. It not to say that older people aren't on there too, like Margaret. I'm on there technically. But it is a great place for kids who are interested in writing gaming fiction, like writing stories that are based in game worlds that they play. It is a really popular site for fan fiction. So if you want to write a story about, you know, your favorite Harry Potter characters, you know, having affairs with each other or whatever, you know, you can do that there. The cool thing is it is a place where you can build an audience as a young author, and you can post your stories as you're writing them chapter by chapter, and it has a social media element to it where your followers are encouraging you, asking questions about the story, leaving comments, and it's a great place to learn how to, it's kind of like blogging, but it's more focused on fiction, and it's just a really cool community. It's a unique thing. A lot of people have come out of that community and gone on to do indie publishing or to get book deals. You can sell to Amazon from your Wattpad account. So if you have a kid who is super into creative writing, doing stories, have them go check this out. Don't overly push it, because then they'll think it's not cool. It actually really is cool. Just put it in their head and let them go and investigate and see what they can do with it. I always feel like, man, you know, if I was 12, if I was 13, I used to write these stories for my friends in school and pass them around during the school day or give them to people on the bus in the morning, and then they would hand them off. And I would write these stories in serial format that way. And I always think, wow, like, this is the online version of that. And apparently there are a lot of kids who do it. So if you have a child writer in your world, go check out Wattpad. Just to give a little bit of a push, some of you may listen to the podcast, but you've never gone and gotten on the mailing list at my website. And because of this topic with the Spirit Guide names, I wanted to alert you if you're new in this Shifter Spirits community on Facebook, or you just listen to the podcast app and you're not really on my mailing list. When you get on my mailing list, you get a free download of a tutorial called Contacting Your Spirit Guides 101. And a lot of people will write and ask me questions, you know, like, how do I get in touch with my spirit guides? What kind of practice or ritual should I do to make that happen or develop that communication? So it is a free resource that you can download when you get on my list. So go check that out. Also, I want to make sure and point out that I have a guided meditation called Messages from Your Spirit Guides that's available for sale on my site, but you can also get that as a gift when you become a Patreon supporter. So there are a few different things that go along with today's show topic around the idea of communicating with your guides, and I just wanted to point those out to you. One other thing that happened in personal news, if you know me well and you've listened to me for a while, you know that I'm not a big dreamer. I don't dream a lot. I don't remember my dreams very much. And sometimes I have weird dreams where I'm other people and I think I'm astral traveling or tuning into other people's lives. But Diana Fragman, who's in the Automatic Intuition community and in the Facebook Shift Your Spirits community, posted a thread in Shift Your Spirits community about dream analysis. And it's been a huge, really popular thread. A lot of people posting on there, sharing dreams, interpreting them, talking about dreaming and dream journaling, all that good kind of stuff. So if you're into that, I suggested to Diana that she make it like a weekly thing to run that thread in the group and let everybody have those kind of conversations about their dreams. I sort of thought, okay, well, I'm never going to be posting on this thread. But I got up this morning after having a really cool ascension dream, essentially. I dreamt that I was in a gathering space where a lot of people were gathering together in before some kind of event was supposed to happen. So they're like kind of all meeting up and getting to know one another. And there are a lot of people there that I recognized, and I felt like it was representative of this new community that we're doing in some way. And that's what I was dreaming about. But here's what's cool. In the dream, I was teaching people how to open small portals into another dimension, which apparently we're all going to go to this other dimension soon. So there were a few of us who have the ability to already manipulate things in this dimension or to open small wormholes in this dimension. And one of the things that I was showing people how to do is how to retrieve objects from their houses. Like maybe they left something on their bedside table and they're like, oh crap, I didn't bring my vitamins. And I was teaching people how to open these very small wormholes where it was actually more convenient to work to open an interdimensional wormhole just big enough for your hand to go through to retrieve things from other parts of the world, such as your bedside table. And then, you know, you wouldn't have to travel back home. And so I was going around kind of talking to people and finding out who knew how to do this and who didn't. We were all gathering together and sharing this kind of information and getting ready for some kind of dimensional shift on a large global scale. Dun, dun, dun. Sounds kind of cool. So I kind of feel like it was about y'all. Our Shift Your Spirits community is launched. It's officially open. We'd love to have you if you're not already there. There's like 365 people in there already after just a few weeks. And like the dream analysis thread, there are all kinds of cool conversations going on in there. I will be putting a link in the show notes going forward. There's a link on the podcast page. If you're on Facebook, you can just search Shift Your Spirits community and click join. Before I forget, this is the first week ever that I do not have any new Patreon supporters to thank. I'm a little bit like hurt, you know? There are twice as many people listening this month, so that's weird to me. I don't know. Maybe it's just some kind of strange glitch or weird timing, but there's a lull in the Patreon. I sincerely appreciate all of you who do pledge your support on Patreon. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and you want it to continue. It's very encouraging to me. I am looking currently for about 5 more mastery level supporters. That's all it would take to enable me to give our transcriptionists a bit more real money and some job security to, you know, elevate the work that she's doing for me. She is the person who is supporting me in this podcast and assisting me with a lot of the online content around it. So thanks to her, and that's one of the ways that you can support her as well as me. Listeners who support the show can access that guided meditation that I mentioned called Messages from Your Spirit Guides. There are exclusive bonus episodes on there. And with the mastery level of support, you can download one of my courses for free each month. And this month, going along with this whole conversation about your spirit guide names and communicating with your spirit guides, the free feature course download is Talking to Your Spirit Guides, which has a cool guided meditation and attunement that goes along with it that's particular to that course. So that's in addition to the other guided meditation. Is it cheaper to get even 1 month of Patreon support than to buy the course outright? Why, yes, it is. So take advantage of that. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all that extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. I name everything. Names are the way that I interact mentally, intellectually, psychically, emotionally, with things that even might not ordinarily have names. For instance, computers, my cars, certain trees that I see on a regular basis that I have an affinity for. With something like computers, for example, someone posted about this in the group the other day, asking a question about why their relationship with technology was so terrible. And there was a lot of cursing and a lot of hatred towards the computer, and it made me really aware of my own relationships with computers. I adore my computers. I think of them as artificial intelligence versions of guides. Computers are the way that I live my life. It enables me to have the career that I do, to interact with people, to maintain my friendships. A lot of my life is lived abstractly in a digital realm, as I'm sure yours is too. So to me, especially with it being such a huge part of my work, my computers are like trusty steeds must have been to people, 200 years ago. Your horse was everything. Maybe that's more getting into the realm of what your car is. But for me, my computers, they're not living things. They're not pets. They're not pet rocks. I don't think of them as being spirit entities or alive in any way. I do think that they're the first glimmer of an emerging artificial intelligence that we will probably interact with in our lifetimes. So I've already got a lot of practice interacting with them, but I give different computers names, partly so that I can keep track of them in my file system, especially on my backup drives. I can tell where certain documents would have been in time based on which computer I was using for those few years. And so there will be almost a theme within my life, and the computer's name sometimes represents that from that time period. I give my computers powerful names. The current computer that I'm working on right here as we speak has a very powerful guardian angel protector's name, and for some reason I feel like I shouldn't say what that is. It's like really personal and private, and for psychic security reasons and physical security reasons, I'm not going to tell you what my computer's names are, but they do have names, and they're comparable to people's names or superhero names or angelic entities' names. But I always imbue them with this powerful, wonderful personality, as if they're genies in bottles or guardian angels, that type of vibe. That's how I see them. So maybe that's one of the reasons why I have a good relationship with technology, or maybe it's the other way around, and my relationship with technology comes first, and then that allows me to have the warm fuzzies about technology. I can't really tell you, but so the idea of your spirit guides having individual names is something that's been around in my consciousness for about 15 years. As far as it being something out there that was talked about, I remember years ago, as many of you may, watching Sylvia Brown on Montel Williams and answering questions from the audience. And people would often stand up and ask her, "What's my guide's name?" And she would just throw these names out there. And I also, when I first started blogging, it was one of the things that I blogged about most was this experience that I had of retrieving these names for these entities that were around me, and how I kind of named them and interact with them the same way that I'm talking about my computers. And I can remember at the time that there was a lot of argument in the blog comments of my blog and my peers. There are some people that are respected peers and colleagues of mine who do not believe in spirit guides having names, and part of the philosophy is that they may exist in a realm in which the concept of, human language is just completely not even there. Therefore, their name might be some unintelligible, ungraspable concept that we don't even have the sensory ability to process. And I think that's true. So I do think that the idea of spirit guide names down here in this realm is very much an imposed concept, the same way that we impose the concept of time on something that is really kind of impossible to understand fully, but we have a system of dividing up and naming time and the passing of time, and our brains can wrap around that. And so there is something similar that's happening with spirit guide names, I believe. So let me just state that for the record. It's something that we use down here in the physical world as people, specific to our language and culture and personality. So out there in the wider multiple dimensions of the universe, the concept may fall apart or become more complex or multifaceted in some way. It doesn't really impact our use of it here and now. So that's the reason why I'm good with it. I also always simply got names. You know, like if anybody asks me, hey, do you pick up a name for my spirit guide? I pretty much always have something. Something comes through. I've just always gotten names, and I've always been hyper focused on names and name origins and name meanings. I think it has something to do with the fact that I have an unusual name, or not common name. My name is more common in the UK as a last name. But, you know, growing up, the little license plates that you get for your bicycle, they never had Slade on them. Even baby name dictionaries. When I was a kid, I would go and look to see if they had my name and wanting to know what it meant. And my name was never in those dictionaries. I was 20 years old before I ever found a baby name dictionary with my name in it. And I was in the UK at the time that I ran across it, and I bought it, and I still have it. It is one of the only print books that I still use almost on a daily basis. And if you've ever been on camera with me on Skype or Zoom or something like that, you have probably seen me twist around and reach for it and pull it out when we start talking about names. Names are always a component of the assessment that we do in the automatic intuition program. So I started out doing readings really by doing spirit name readings. And I was talking about my guides and who was who and how I kind of interacted with them and writing about that. And people started writing to me and asking me if I could pick up on a name for their spirit guide. And this was an uncanny amount of emails that I got that were all the same question. And so I remembered Sylvia Brown, you know, passing out her spirit guide names. And I thought, well, you know, if it's good enough for Sylvia, it's good enough for me. And so I started doing these spirit guide name readings. And that was really the first kind of psychic reading that I ever did for other people, if you don't count interpreting someone's chart, which even though it was astrology, sometimes I think my intuition would play a part in how I would explain someone's chart to them. So back to these spirit guide name readings, they were email readings. They were really simple. And I remember thinking, well, you know, Sylvia, how do we really know that you're just not randomly pulling names out of a hat? You know, I mean, not that I necessarily thought that about her, but I could see how other people might think that. And I thought, I've got to put something else in these readings so that people understand that I'm really tuned into them individually, so that it helps them to accept, like, yeah, this is a name that I got for you. I didn't just flip a book open and, you know, cover my eyes and pick a name at random and email it to you. I actually really tuned in and listened. And in finding out what your spirit guide's name was, I would also pick up on impressions about you and your personality and what you were like. And so I started to include this little personal identification section in all those readings to let people know, kind of like, hey, you know, this is you. And if you resonate with this as being true, then that helps you to accept the other pieces of information going along with this. And so that's really how my psychic readings grew, because as I started to get feedback from the readings, the feedback started to be more and more about the other things that I was picking up about people. And those details tended to grow. And over time, the some of the spirit guide name information took a backseat to much more pressing questions. You know, if people are going to spend the time and the money to talk to me, there are often things that they care about here in the real world that they want to talk about a lot more than something that's kind of ethereal and unable to be proven and maybe neither here nor there. So I saw that drop off a little bit over time. It still surprises me, though, that it's always kind of there for the asking if anybody wants to know. I don't make a big point of forcing that on anyone unless they express an interest in it. But long story short, I get names and I give them and I continue to give them out because of the feedback that goes along with them. There's a lot of different ways that specific names and words pop up for me as a clairaudient, as a claircognizant, intuitive. It often comes tumbling out in normal conversation, as I'll try to give you some examples of different ways that this manifests for me. But more than anything, you know, I would give people names and they would have some kind of association with them. And weirdly, my names never produced associations with people who passed away. I very rarely have experiences doing mediumship, but I have had some very interesting experiences with doing mediumship. So I'm trying not to say I don't do that, because there is some indication that I can. It's just not something I'm presented with as often. Here's a story I've never told anyone before. So my nephew, who's 18 months old at the time of this recording, his name is Hayden. And that name is a name that exists in my journals as far back as being a teenager. And you know how you have that kind of list of names that, like, oh, if I ever have a kid, I want to name him this, or I really like this name for a girl. You know, you've probably had that thought at some point. Some of you may have pretty elaborate lists around that. I wonder how many of those names that you want to name your kid when you're 10 actually end up being the names that you name your kid. Or if you veer off in a completely different direction once there's another person involved in getting to choose the name. But so that name, I didn't really know that it was necessarily like, ooh, if I have a son, I'm going to name him this, because I didn't really ever have a conception that I would have children. I just really liked that name. And for me, I had names for characters in fiction. That was something that I was always kind of brainstorming, is cool ideas for names for characters. And sometimes the names would come first and I'd be like, that's a really cool name for a female, you know, ninja or whatever. And then I would elaborate and grow the character from the name. So this name Hayden was really significant to me throughout my teen years. And when I was 19, I actually wrote a story about a real experience that I had with a spirit in my freshman dorm room. And for the purposes of the story, I needed to disguise what the real name was. And so I wanted to give him like another name. And so in that piece of fiction, I used the word or the name Hayden for that spirit. And I worked on that story for many years. It's still, it grew. And over time, it was something that I came back to maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I pulled it out and started looking at it again and thought, you know, there's something here. There's some bones of some good story. One of the things, though, that I decided after working on it, and this was about 5 years ago, it's in the cloud busting universe. If you've read the novel Cloud Busting, it's actually would be sort of a prequel to that story. It's a story leading up to that summer for that character. And the spirit Hayden was very much a spirit that was waiting to be born into flesh again, and was actively probably pursuing and trying to manipulate people in some way in order to inhabit flesh again and to come in. So there was a little bit of darkness around it. And I shelved that project even after working on it again. decades later, I was like, okay, I like this story, but that name is not creepy enough for me. It's not dark enough. I need to come up with another name for that spirit character. And in the meantime, set it aside and thought, you know, I'll kind of come back to it if it wants to be come back to. And then a couple of years ago, my brother and sister-in-law got pregnant. And they started talking about the names that they were going to choose for their child. And the first thing that they said, if it's a boy, his name's going to be Hayden. And I was like, oh, crap, that's a weird synchronicity. And I actually told her and my brother a little bit about it without getting too deep into like what that character represented in my story, because my brother's pretty sensitive and I think he's more psychic than I am, but he does not like to talk about these things and is a little bit more creeped out by it, whereas I'm like super into it, you know. It makes him uncomfortable, and I was worried that if I told him like, yeah, that was the name of an evil spirit in a story that I wrote, that it would creep them out and make them not want to use the name, because I really loved the name and I thought, yeah, that's a really cool name for him. So I did tell her, my sister-in-law, you know what's really crazy? I have journal entries going back to my teen years where I talk about my love for that name. And she said, that's really cool. Okay, that's enough of a confirmation for me. And they did end up naming him that. So that's just an example of like one of these like really charged scenarios that I've had with names that stretches out over years and years and years. I also get really difficult, bizarre names that I don't even really think I've ever heard before. And you would think it's one thing to tell someone that they have a spirit guide named John, right? And like tell them, oh, yes, you're going to see signs everywhere that that's your spirit guide's name. That's a pretty easy one. And actually, I don't think I've had a lot of Johns, but John, I actually have had a lot of Marys, though, as spirit guide names and in connection to Mother Mary. So that's another issue. Usually there are extra signs that go along with Mary that let us know it's her. But just to give you an example of one of these really bizarre ones that happened recently, Seth and I were texting, and I sent him this silly picture. It's a meme of a cat that tried to turn into a peacock, and it's sort of half cat, half peacock. And it says something about, you know, like a shape shifting fail, or something like when your shape shifting fails, but you still look fabulous. And it's this picture of this cat/peacock. And I sent it to him because we have an ongoing magical practice of creating this menagerie of fairy animals. And it's something that we play with and talk about. And so I sent him this picture and he said something about like, oh, I think that's my spirit animal, and was asking me, what do you think the guide's name is? And I said, Clytemnestra. Which he then began to explain to me that he was, and Seth, if I get this wrong, like, sorry. But something to the effect of he was standing outside in the parking lot, like trying to photograph a rainbow or a storm or something. And he was having a conversation with someone about Greek goddesses. And Clytemnestra is either the daughter of a goddess or a god or something. But anyway, that name is part of like classical literature. I think she may be in the Medea or, you know, one of those old plays or something. So it's definitely a name that I've heard before. It's buried in my psyche somewhere. But there was this really weird synchronicity where I pulled this Greek goddess's name out of thin air, you know, at the moment that he's kind of having this interaction with another person about that. So that's just an example of like an everyday occurrence that will happen with these names that come to me. One of the best confirmations that I ever got for a client reading, when I give a client a spirit guide name in the context of a reading, whether that's the focus of the reading or just an incidental piece of information, I always ask for them to have clarification. And together we call in or invoke synchronicities and signs of affirmation from that spirit that we do have their name right. And so that can take very mundane forms. It's just like, okay, for the next few days, you have this surge of seeing that name everywhere, or, you know, you interact with somebody at Starbucks and the name's on their name tag, or you look up at the television and there's a name on the screen and someone's talking and that's their name. And, you know, you see these little winks and synchronicities in your daily life where that name is being highlighted. And that's the kind of expectation that I have, without giving them too much detail about what to look for, but just letting them know, you know what, you'll get some confirmations around that name. So this particular client was an expat living in Italy at the time of her reading. And we pulled through this name. I don't even remember if it was an Italian name. It could have been a Polish name. It was a surname. It was very complex and unusual. I can't even remember what it is right now, but it was, imagine, I don't know, some kind of Czech or Polish or Italian name that's, you know, not Smith, you know, like something really unique, a name that I'd never specifically heard before. And I kind of tried to spell it for her or whatever. And I remember joking with her and saying, you know, telling her the thing about getting the feedback on the name. And I was like, this is probably not going to happen for you. I can't imagine how it could. You know, this is a tall order, but we'll see what happens. And she was laughing about it too. Like, yeah, that's never going to happen. I got an email from her half an hour later. She, after getting off the phone from the reading with me, she went downstairs and went to a cafe and she grabbed a couple of newspapers and got her coffee and she sat down at a little table outside and she flipped the newspaper over, and on the front page was a story about this Italian porn film director who had just been, like, I don't know, busted for money laundering or child porn or whatever. It was like this big scandal that was in the newspaper, and that was his name. And she was like, okay, it's kind of weird that it's a porn director, but the synchronicity of that is too amazing. So that was one of the ones that I was just like, okay, I am forever going to give out whatever name that I get, because obviously there's something to it. And actually, that's kind of my attitude at this point. I don't know how it works. I just know that it does work. So I'm just going to continue doing it until I decide otherwise. You kind of have to go with the name that you're given, you know, at least until you investigate. Because I remember telling her, oh, you might want to shorten that or turn it into a nickname or something if it makes it easier for you to work with that name. But to willfully change it is definitely something that could be an option. But wait and see what comes up for the name that you do get. People are often disappointed by the names of their guides. And, you know, it's not always me giving them out. Like, for instance, in the attunement meditation that we do in the beginning of the automatic intuition program, you retrieve your own guide's name during a meditation. And so even still, people come to me with, like, okay, this is kind of a dorky name, but this is what I got. And I kind of call it, you know, the George the Asian immigrant phenomenon. It's like, you know how in you can be in one culture, say in America where we speak English, and someone will immigrate to our country from a very different language system, like, you know, Chinese or Japanese or something that is not even as close as, say, you know, a European name, something really from a different part of the world. And they will often adopt adopt English names for a variety of reasons to, you know, kind of make it easier for people to say their name or to represent symbolically their new American identity, whatever it might be. That is a common practice that they will take on a name that they feel is Americanized in some way. And the names that they choose are always kind of funny, right? Like they don't go with them. We sort of giggle when we see this, you know, man from East Asia whose name is George or Eugene or something kind of off, and it doesn't seem to go with what he looks like or whatever. And so I think sometimes the guides are doing something similar. I don't think they 100% have the ability to grasp the nuances of our language and experience and the dimension we're in. And so they choose these things kind of like they're trying to assimilate a little bit. And so they end up choosing things that sound a little funny to us. So that could be one component of it. But something that I've found, especially during readings, is that the names can often be a message in themselves. Like the names can be conveying something conceptual or thematic to the client. And so I always like to look up names in the moment. Like I said, I turn around and I reach for my little dictionary and I pull it out and I say, you know what, let's look that name up. You can also Google name meaning colon, whatever the name is, and you'll get, you know, information about the name origin and, you know, what it means and whether or not it's a boy's name and all that kind of stuff, right? So with reading clients, sometimes they already have a significant association with the name. Like maybe the name I pull through for the spirit guide is that name that they're like, oh my God, I always wrote in my diary that I was going to have a son named that or whatever. It's kind of fun to play with, okay, what is the message that is buried in the etymology and the complexity of this name's history, right? And you don't always know that at first blush. So there is an intellectual academic component to doing a little bit of research around the names to get some additional meaning. And there's often significance and synchronicity within that. So to give you an example, sometimes my clients really hate the names that I pull through for them. I had a hairstylist one time who got a reading with me. She was so pissed that her spirit guide's name was Oliver, that she like berated me about it and like went off on this tirade about the name and how ridiculous it was. And I remember being a little offended in the moment because, weirdly enough, my hairstylist had a baby infant son named Oliver. And so I felt this like weird kind of like offense on behalf of her that this other woman was making fun of the name. And, you know, I tried to just be like, well, you know what, it's what I got and you don't have to like it. And you can certainly give him another one if you want to. But I have to kind of stick by and trust that there's a reason why I'm picking up on that name, because it often proves true. You know, and I told her a little bit about the history of what I'm telling you about doing these readings. And so she got off the call in a huff. And I really even thought for a moment, like, you know what, I almost just want to give her a refund just to disconnect from her energy. And I just like, okay, if you're that unhappy with the reading, then forget it. You know, let's just call the whole thing off. I can't remember if I did give her a refund or not. But it was like a really bad interaction. Like it went down really bad. Have only ever had like two or three of that kind of episode ever happen with anyone. So I have to tell you, I get an email from her months and months and months later apologizing to me. And she told me that, again, she's a hairstylist and she has up on her station a little collection of framed images around hairstyling stuff or whatever. And like, you know, one of the images is her framed license that she has to display. And then she had some other like cool old like barbershop pictures or something like that. And so she told me, she said, one of the pictures is signed, like has someone's autograph at the bottom of it, or it has a name in ink indicating that that's the person in the picture. And it was like a, you know, little happy barber from 1910 or whatever. And she wrote to tell me that his name was Oliver, and that that name was written in ink on a photograph that had hung at her station for years before I ever even did the reading for her and since. And so I was like, wow, okay, well, glad I stuck to, you know, stuck to it and didn't back down from it. One of my favorite stories about guide names actually happened with one of my mentoring clients named Christina. And Christina has had a long history of doing energy work, and she's a healer and she's very successful at it and has had a practice for a long time. But when she came to start working with me, one of the things that she really wanted to develop was her ability to do readings, meaning read the client, communicate to them the phenomenon that she was observing. Because as she explained it to me, she could move the energy and she could heal energy and release it and clear it and do all kinds of things, but she could not explain it to someone, have a conversation around it, put into words. It's just, it confounded her. And so that was one of the things that she wanted to work on. So as we are doing her assessment, her attunement session, which is the first session that we do in automatic intuition, I have everyone tell me about their experience with the attunement. They walk me through it like it's a dream that they had, and I take notes, and there are neurolinguistic clues in the word choice that they use, in addition to the symbolism that they bring through, that tells me things about their abilities and how their abilities are wanting to manifest and where their blocks are, all that kind of stuff. So during that session, she told me that the name that she retrieved for her Akashic Record guide was Rhonda. And she kind of giggled about it. And I giggled about it too, because Rhonda is the name of my dental hygienist since I'm 14 years old. I've had the same hygienist and her name's Rhonda. So when you say the name Rhonda to me, I picture this sweet little blonde lady in scrubs. And Christina was joking about the fact that like Rhonda doesn't really sound like a guide's name. You know, it's not something exotic or, you know, profound or biblical or anything like that. And so we were kind of giggling about it, and we went on with the session and we were continuing to discuss other things. And then I remembered, you know, ooh, Rhonda, let's look her up in the name dictionary. I'm just curious what that might mean. So, the one other thing I forgot to tell you about this whole issue that she was having with being able to vocalize the stuff that she sees. Throughout the entire process of her telling me her attunement experience, she was clearing her throat and coughing. And I said, you definitely are blocked in the throat chakra. You know, your ability to speak and to access your voice is an issue for you. Like, you're actually struggling to have a conversation with me about it. And so we got out the baby name dictionary, and I said, let's just see what Rhonda means. And Rhonda means voice. And we both just died, you know, screaming on the phone, like chills up and down our body, like no way, right? So that kind of thing does happen a lot around these names. So I think of names as being significant partly for the message and the symbolism and the theme that they might bring through that represents something about your lessons and your purpose. Does it help you to focus, you know, or invoke spirit by calling on these helpers? If having that name helps you kind of interact in a ritualistic way, or like I said, to sort of wrap your mind around something that's harder to wrap the mind around, then by all means, I think the name can be sort of a shorthand. It's like a magic spell or a mantra. A lot of people will go down this rabbit hole of wanting to do kind of like a full spirit guide and guardian panel and like bios on every single entity and what they do and what their name is and where they come from and all that kind of stuff. And I think this is something that we all go through as we start to uncover this and explore it. It may be kind of like a phase that you go through where you're like, okay, well, I want to know who everyone is. And you can definitely work on that. You can find that out. You can investigate. You can get the guides that talk to you more to communicate about the others through, you know, meditations and automatic writing sessions, all kinds of things. And I would have thought, you know, because I went through that phase early on in doing these readings and everything, that would have become more complex and complicated over time. Like the further I go in this process, the more I'm going to delve in and learn about all these different people. And I'm just going to be populating this, you know, dimension full of entities and who they are and what they do. And the weird thing is just the opposite has happened for me. Over time, it's all kind of collapsed together and become more vague and more kind of rolled all up into like a little bubble. And I just, you know, think about the bubble. I don't break the bubble apart and go into all the little molecules that are inside there. I just go, yep, there's my bubble. I think of my guides as kind of a single group entity, not unlike the way that I'm speaking to you right now. I can sense there are thousands of you listening, and it's like a crowd that morphs between being an individual person and then being like this multi-souled thing at the same time. So there's a similar feeling to me with the concept of audience, with the guides. I kind of have this guardian angel spirit that I've been aware of the longest in my lifetime. She goes all the way back to childhood for me. And I guess she's technically what we would call an Asher, or the personal guardian angel spirit that, you know, like we tell little kids that they have. I just like her. I just like talking to her. And I have been addressing her as an individual among my guides for so long that whenever I want to talk to my guides, I kind of have a tendency just to talk to her with the understanding that the others are listening, that she has the ability to pass on and delegate, and that they can figure it out amongst themselves. So I either talk to her or I talk to them as a group. And that's usually the way that I interact with them at this point. So you may be wondering like how to get your guides' names. And I think the easiest thing to do is just ask, especially if you feel a presence or you're meditating or trying to communicate with your guides and calling them in, ask for a name, see what pops in your head. And also ask for, like I did with my clients, a confirmation in the real world about that name. And then you'll start to see those synchronicities letting you know, hey, that's the name. Automatic writing is another way that you might retrieve that kind of detail. You can also just speak, do dialoguing. If you set a voice recorder on your phone and just start channeling and speaking to your guides and asking them questions. And another exercise I like to do with people is write a scene in which you are creating a fictional version of yourself, quote unquote fictional, who is a master psychic. You know, write a character for yourself as if it's in a novel or a film. And this psychic has a spirit guide that she communicates with. And the guide's name is what? You know, pick a really cool name for that guide. That's another way to use the imagination to get at the intuition. Sometimes the things that you think you're imagining are intuitive impulses. And again, there are feedback and signs from other people and external sources that will let you know when that's something intuitive. So you can also get a reading, you know, from anybody who does readings that might pick up a name for you and work with that. And again, ask, you know, for signs in the real world of affirmation. So one thing that a lot of people ask me about this topic is why psychics might get a different name from you. So for instance, you may have this name that you retrieved on your own, and then you go get a reading with someone and they come back to you and say, oh, I talked to a guide and it was a different name. I think one of the best ways to explain what could be happening there, because I don't want to tear down anybody's abilities. Somebody may have just talked to a different guide. You have lots of guides around you. And the guide that I just said that I had a preference for communicating with is not a guide that's going to speak with someone who is a stranger, who's external to me. Like those guardian angel guides, those are locked up. Like they really present an imposing fortress of energy to anybody outside of you that's approaching them. Whereas you have this, you know, relationship with them. They're like a Secret Service agent that's following you around, and you know them and you're comfortable with them. So they don't have the same impact. But psychics can't necessarily get at certain parts of your guide team or your chart or, you know, information about you. There could be reasons why you are keeping that close, or it's, you know, a security issue or a safety issue. So one of the ways to describe how this goes down is to think of like the metaphor of a party. Let's say that there is a big surprise party for you. It's a birthday party. And there are people there from your family. There are friends of yours from school. There are people there that you work with. They're all from these different kind of environments. And so maybe I'm invited to this party. And I go to this party, and the person who's your best friend in the whole world may not be the person that I click with or that I end up encountering, or, you know, I might run into somebody really neat and end up in the corner having a great conversation with them and come away and be like, yeah, telling you about who I met at your party. And, you know, the person that I interacted with the most and really clicked with and liked was somebody that you work with that you're not even really that close to. So, you know, it's a personality thing that could be part of it. Another thing too is if you send me into that party with a specific investigation around your job and career, then I'm going to move through the party and be like, okay, who here works with my client? And I'm going to get a small amount of people raising their hands. So I'm going to focus on communicating just with those people. Again, I may be talking to somebody that you work with who knows things about you in that environment. Meanwhile, your best friend in the whole world that you've known since you were 5 is on the other side of the room, you know, doing the Macarena and wearing a lampshade on their head. Who knows? But so just keep in mind that you do have multiple guides, and different guides can connect to different psychics depending on the time frame, what's going on with you. You could have something going on in your life that's making one of your guides more active, like they're, you know, more at the forefront driving a major issue that's going on. And so that might be the guide that presents forward when you get a reading. So, you know, at the end of the day, I want you to always defer to your own information. So if you retrieve information on your own and it's comfortable for you and you have an emotional attachment to a particular guide and a particular name, then you go with that. You know, if somebody comes along and says, oh, you have a guide and it's got a different name, that's fine. Throw that person into the mix as a secondary guide and move on, and continue to practice and work with the name and the entity that you feel most connected with. If it doesn't empower you or make you feel more magical to talk to guides at all, then don't force it. I know there are a lot of people here who are smart people who think of these concepts in more symbolic archetypal terms, more of a psychological, analytical, dream symbolism place. You can be both intellectual and a little bit woo-woo at the same time, and that might allow you to access some of this information that you might otherwise dismiss as being like ridiculous or far-fetched or something like that. So if it feels silly to you to have these imaginary friends, then what I suggest to you is that you begin to think of the concept of guides as archetypal programs. We all have tons of human archetypes that we work with and that we embody in different contexts and different times in our life and in different sort of relationship scenarios. So think of these archetypal programs as being like apps you can download. And some apps you use more than others. You have apps that are downloaded on your phone that you've never opened up, you know, just because you don't care to check the stock market or whatever it might be. But it is available to you should something change and you want to access that. So think about spirit guides, if it helps you, as these kind of archetypal programs that you can access and run, and that the guides are representing some facet of your experience as a human being. Maybe you as the mother archetype, maybe you as the wounded child, the magician, the artist, all these different kind of facets and components of human experience that we have to choose from. You could think of those as spirit guides that exist within the psyche. You technically have free will to do whatever you want with this concept, including change the names of your guides or give them names if they aren't forthcoming. Maybe they just look at you with a blank stare like, I don't have a human name. And give them a nickname if you want. Go back through that list of like what you wanted to name your kids when you grew up and pick a name for them. You know what's interesting? People rarely ask me their spirit guide names anymore, even when I have them on the phone for an hour. So I kind of feel like now, having talked about this, I'm going to get that question a little bit more. And that's fine. But it's something that we can always throw in. And I always think, why doesn't anybody ever ask that? I could tell them if they wanted to know. So if you want to know, go to SladeRoberson.com and book a reading with me, and we'll talk about it. Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to SladeRoberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at AutomaticIntuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. Your intuition is fast. If you're spending time, hours, days, contemplating a course of action, you're probably in your thinking mind and listening to your ego. There's nothing wrong with making fast decisions on your initial feelings. If it's wrong, you'll find out faster. You'll know immediately in most cases, and you can change course. Most times, even when you make a difficult decision, relying entirely on instinct, intuition, your higher self, your gut, you'll know right away if it was the right choice by the sense of relief you feel. How do you learn to trust your intuition more? By acting on these impulses and seeing the feedback from the universe when you do so, which is evidence. When you have some evidence, your faith and your intuition will relax and expand. So act on faith. In yourself. See what happens when you act quickly. And I'll talk to you later.